Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jamie. Today, a call-in show, host Latara Smith of KC Freedom Project is in the studio with resources for those coming out of prison. And we ask for you to call in with your story of reentry and what resources you found helpful. We also would like to know what you have heard about the newly passed Criminal Justice Reform Act. Get pen and paper and write this phone number down, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. So you can call in when we open the phone lines. Or look for this week's episode pinned to the top of the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page and ask your question in the comments section. No calendar of events this week, but stay tuned for a letter from behind the walls in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Up next is Latara Smith.
Well, hello, everyone. It's Latara Smith of the KC Freedom Project, and I am here today. I have two wonderful guests in the studio today that we're going to be talking about reentry programs and resources available here in Kansas City, Missouri. I have Mr. DeAndre Kennedy here today with me. Thank you, DeAndre, for coming on the show with me today.
Thanks for having me, Tara.
You're most definitely welcome. And then I have Mrs. Teresa Perry of Share the Love House. Ms. Perry, thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, you know, one thing that people don't understand, we talk about people coming out of prison and people getting readjusted in society and how we want them to become productive citizens. But sometimes people don't always understand how difficult, you know, that is. Most definitely understand how difficult that is, especially if someone has been incarcerated for, you know, a long amount of time. Okay. Everyone knows I myself am an ex-offender. And though I've been released from prison for almost 20 years now, I still remember, most definitely remember what it was like when I came out of federal prison and what it was like for me to transition from prison to society, not just for myself, but also being a single mother of six children. Teresa, there was a lot of challenges and there was not a lot of resources that many years ago in reentry. Now we do have quite a few resources.
Correct.
For individuals that are in reentry. Now, Mrs. Perry, you're really good in our community about reaching out and helping with resources and whatnot. Do you know of a lot of resources available? Can you share the resources that you do know that is available for those who are coming out of prison? And we do have some we're going to go over, but I know you have some hidden in your little bag somewhere.
Well, I mainly try to work with a lot of people that I see are really pushing the resources, because some people say they have the resources, and I'm just wondering if people are going to be upfront with you. And all I can say is I have some like Beyond Conviction. We have Candace Wesson and Eric Wesson. They have a program they run for the women.
Yes,
out there.
They do. And Candace has a very nice program
yes,
for women.
Yes, she do. And I even, you know, donate to it when I can. I mean, little things, but we have KC. I think it's Help KC for Felons.
Yes, we do.
But I believe it could be more done.
You think we need more reentry resources?
I think,
and you know what,
and more money in that area.
Those organizations that you mentioned, I'm going to give everyone their information here in a little bit later on in the show. But I totally agree with you. We most definitely need more reentry programs here in Kansas City. We also most definitely need more reentry transitional housing programs. Okay,
badly.
For both men and women.
Badly,
both men and women. And I know that, you know, some people are having problems being released from incarceration because they don't have anywhere to stay, especially if someone is a sex offender. Then you have all these limits of where you can stay, where you can't stay.
Correct.
You understand what I'm saying? DeAndre, what do you think about that? What do you think would be?
Well, not necessarily being a felon myself, but knowing and having relationships with friends and family members that have been incarcerated in the system, what I've noticed is there's definitely a lack of psychological support for these people that come out, you know, coming back into a habitat to where your way of thinking is different, and you might not be used to the normality of things anymore. So their everyday relationships with people may hinder them and cause challenges that cause depression and anxiety.
Right. And then, DeAndre, that's an excellent point that he brought up.
Great.
Don't you think, Teresa?
Yes,
most definitely
I do.
Excellent point, because, see, what happens, DeAndre, is we have so many individuals who are, when they're in prison, are diagnosed with mental health issues and disabilities,
right.
And then they come out. And if someone is not there to you know, to kind of underguard them, to help them and to guide them and help them to get those resources, you know, for mental health.
Correct.
Then now we're talking a whole nother ball game at this point. Do you understand what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, it's like, seriously, like, not only do they have the issue of transitioning out and getting readjusted in society after being incarcerated, they're also dealing with the challenges of having, you know, to deal with mental illness as well. And a lot of times, and people may not know this, but a lot of times what happens is people reoffend.
Right.
And sometimes they reoffend because of lack of resources.
That's it.
And maybe because they have some mental health issues and they're not, you know, addressing those issues, or maybe they're not compliant with mental health services.
And they're reverting back to their ways.
And then they will not just revert back to ways, but sometimes it's a life.
It could be suicide. I mean, just honestly, if they don't get what they need, and I mean, and we're talking about, I like when they say the second chance program. Okay, second chance, maybe we didn't even have the first chance. And that's
right.
why they did what they did. So we need them resources in that area to help them go on and be that productive citizen they could have been in the first place if everything was there. I mean, it's a lot of things lacking as far as resources in the community. And people are like, why people are like this, or they're crazy. No, it's not that. It's because they don't have what they need to make it to be a productive citizen.
Right, right. And a lot of people don't know that I can think back to when I was released from federal prison. Like, I've been out probably almost 20 years now. And there were some days literally that I was like, I just want to go back. It was easier. Wow. It was easier for me to be in prison. Like, oh my God, because I'm out here and I'm having to face not just the reality of being out, but I had to get custody of my children. We didn't have a place to stay. We had to go to the homeless shelter. I didn't have transportation. So here I am with six kids. We're on the bus. I'm trying to find a job. I'm trying to get them to daycare. It was a lot. And we didn't have a lot of resources in place. But now that we do, because we have more than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We have more
yeah.
than 20
yeah.
years ago. But, you know, I'm gonna talk about a few of them. You mentioned Beyond Conviction.
Correct.
Okay. That is a very nice program. That is a very nice program. They offer a lot of services for the people. And let me see. I have their information down here, too. Let me see here. Beyond Conviction. I want to give out their phone number for anyone that is listening. If you are an ex-offender or someone that's been released, some people don't like to be referred to as an ex-offender. So someone who has
Correct.
Been released from prison.
Right. Thank you.
And you are, you know, reentering society, and there are some resources that you need. I have a number here for you for Beyond the Conviction. It is 816-842-4975. That's 816-842-4975. Now, we also have here in Kansas City, we have the Kansas City Metropolitan Crime Commission, okay?
Yes.
They help individuals with employment,
Correct.
Resume building, mock interviews. They have job leads as well, okay?
That's awesome.
That's really awesome.
That's awesome. They listen too.
Yeah, they do.
Listen.
They help with housing. They give you information on felony-friendly housing. They even can offer financial assistance towards housing. I think they do like one time a year. That's like a limit.
Okay.
But still, that's a help. You know,
yes.
if you're trying to get into an apartment and maybe you have the rent, but you don't have the deposit,
Correct.
This organization could possibly help you. Okay? They help you with personal needs, access to education, basic health needs, eyeglasses, doctor's appointments, diabetic supplies, things as such. It seems to be a wonderful, wonderful program.
Right.
So, you know, they're called, they're also known as Second Chance.
Okay.
Second Chance. And they're located at 3100 Broadway,
mm-hmm.
Suite 302 here in Kansas City, Missouri. Zip code is 64111. And their contact number is 816-960-6800. And I do know some individuals that actually received some assistance from this particular agency, and they only had good things to say about this particular organization. So along with that, we have the Missouri Reentry Programs and Assistance. Okay, I'm going to kind of say that again, Missouri Reentry Programs and Assistance. Their website is www.exoffenders.net. And they have a wonderful website loaded with tons of reentry information and programs that are available. Okay? And I pray that some of these resources, you know, and we have more that we're going to list before we end the show. But I pray that some of these resources really do help someone, because it is very, very difficult to come out of prison and to try to get readjusted in society. All of the challenges that you have, you know, I can remember when I was released from prison, I had to get my children. You know, one of my children had gotten caught up in the juvenile system while I was gone. And that happens when there's a parent that's gone out of the home. If dad is already missing and mom makes mistakes and go to prison like I did, then you have the children with nobody. Correct. And I remember getting out of prison and having to get my son out of the juvenile. I mean, I literally got out of prison on October 18, 2002 on a Friday. And I was in juvenile court on Monday with my son to get him. And I remember me getting my son out of juvenile. He was supposed to go to court the same day I was, October 18th, but the judge put it off because my social worker allowed me to call the courts to tell them I'm getting out that same day. So they put his court date off till that Monday because they said his guardian, you know, his biological mother can get him and be here because the state was getting ready to take my son into custody. That's what part of that hearing was about, because he just cut up real bad when I was gone, gave my mom the blues, and he was being entered into the state foster care system on that Monday, but they held the hearing up till I got there. So can you imagine the challenges I faced getting out of prison on a Friday, in juvenile court on a Monday? They released my son to me. We didn't even have transportation home. We literally had to, we caught the city bus home from court. And I mean, it was just wild. But just from that day forward, here I am dealing with the juvenile system. Here I am trying to get my other children. We didn't have housing. We ended up having to go to a homeless shelter because I lost everything in the 12 months that I was gone to federal prison. So I literally had to get out and reestablish myself. And I did not have these resources. And it's only by the grace of God that I did not reoffend.
Yeah. Yes. And that's what's so awesome. And that's what's so awesome about these radio shows and people like you, Latara, because knowing is half the battle. And a lot of times they get out and they don't even know which direction to go. So us doing this and spreading awareness that these services are out there for people, I think is definitely a great thing that you're doing out here for the community.
Well, thank you. You know, and y'all know me. I'm just so, I mean, you can just see right through me. I don't hide anything. It's all part of my testimony. I'm not ashamed of anything or anything I've ever walked through. I'm not ashamed of. So I speak openly about it. But I can tell you, and that is why come I end up working in reentry, going back into prisons, teaching programs, opening. I've opened a few transitional living programs before for both men and women. And the reason I did that is because I didn't want, if I could ease someone else's walk coming out of prison, then I wanted to do that, because I saw so many times, just a short time that I was in federal prison, I saw so many women come in and out. Prison literally was a revolving door. They would get out and they would be back within 3 to 6 months. Correct. Sometimes on purpose, because they said it was easier for them to be in prison as opposed to being out there trying to struggle and deal with maintaining their sobriety and then trying to get their children back and things as such. It was really, really difficult.
And that's why they need these resources. it is so needed in your testimony today, that even though you didn't have them, we need people to know, you see how Latara did it? Oh, you can make it. You just keep fighting. Now you have even the resource. She didn't have them.
Right.
And all she had to do that day, coming out, go get her child, all that. Her resource was God. And so these resources that you have along with God now, please take advantage of. Please stay out. Because like she said, it's not only affecting her, it affects your family. It trickles down, trickle up. But one thing I would love to say, and I always say when I talk to some of my friends, I don't like calling them felons. See, it's the caught and the uncaught. See, some people ain't even been caught, and they did the same thing. So for the ones that are caught, know that, hey, no one's no better than you and that you can make it, and we got the resources to help you get through it.
Exactly. That's most definitely correct. For those of you who are just now tuning in, my name is Latar Smith. I'm of the KC Freedom Project. I am here hosting a radio show, and I have Mr. DeAndre Kennedy
Good
with
morning.
Me. And I have Miss Teresa Perry of
Good
Share
morning.
The Love House. And our subject and topic today is talking about reentry programs for people who are coming out of incarceration. Now, I want to say this too, okay? We're going to get back to some more of these resources, but I want to say this. We not just need more reentry programs for people who are coming out. We also need more programs for the exonerees that are coming out.
Correct.
We have men and both women who are in prison for crimes that they did not commit. And some of these men have done decades, okay?
Yeah.
15, 20, yes. 30, 35 years in prison for crimes that they did not commit.
And that's making their self-esteem at a whole different level.
Oh, it brings on a lot of challenges, yeah. Because not only, I mean, they kind of face, I mean, coming out is coming out of prison,
right.
Period. It is what it is.
But coming out for something
you
didn't do?
I mean, whether it's 12 months, I remember when I got out, I didn't tell anybody in my family I was getting out. I was just like, I'm getting out. You know, right. I'm just going to get out and I'm going to go home and that'll be it, you know. And some of the girls that I was with, they would have all these fancy outfits sent in and limousines, pick them up and all this type of stuff. I was like, put me in the cab, ship me to Greyhound and let me get back in Oklahoma. I'm good, you know.
Right.
A box of Frosted Flakes, you'll be all right.
Yeah, some Frosted Flakes and I'm going to be all right. Don't be telling my secrets on the radio. So this is the deal. So I remember when I got off at the bus station, I had my cardboard box. Mm-hmm. It said my little inmate number, 08598062. I don't think that's the number I'll ever forget. Right. It was written on that box because that's what you're referred to, your last name and your inmate number. Yeah. I was no longer Latar. I was Smith, 08598062. That's who right. I was, okay? So I remember sitting my little box down, and I went to use the phone to call my friend Marcy to come pick me up because she was the only one knew that I was being released. And I go to use the payphone. I've only been gone 10 and a half months, basically. I go to use the payphone, and it was like 50 cents. I was like, huh? What happened? So just think of the payphone change, the amount of the payphone within a few months. Can you imagine how things have changed for these and my brothers?
Yes.
Who are innocent, wrongly convicted, or even just someone that's done a lot of prison time to come out.
Correct.
And everything has changed.
Right.
I mean, like, everything. Right. My brother's in Missouri Department of Corrections. Right now, they have tablets. They're, like, super excited because they've got their tablets, but they're lost. They're trying to figure it out. Miss Smith, how do we do this, and how do I do that? You know? So, you know, it's wonderful they have tablets. I've got to give DOC a little credit there.
You're right.
Yeah. But the point I'm making is there, you know, a lot changes.
Right.
So when you have someone coming out of prison, we're talking about the exonerees. They've already been in prison all this time for crimes they didn't commit.
Yes.
They're not just coming out having to readjust. They're coming out too dealing with some psychological issues.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
Coming out trying to get, you know what I'm saying, stable
Correct.
Mentally. And not just them, but anyone coming out of prison that's done a lot of time. But for an exoneree, it just seems like it'll hit a little harder because you've taken me out of society and, you know, I didn't do this. And now here I am having to rebuild. I'm having to readjust. I've got to get to know my family, my grandchildren that I've never raised. I've got to do all this.
Or either for the one, I think her name is Sitopia. I fight because I do a lot of signed petitions for wrongly convicted people. And even for her, even though she had to, you know, I don't even want to call it commit a crime, trying to save her life, had to, you know, stab the guy with whoever he was that was, you know, a sex trafficker of her, and she's still in jail, and we fighting for her right now. Think they're getting ready to give her clemency. But like you said, just for her and just the mental health piece, that's one of the hard resources for me because I could send you down to Truman Medical or I could send you over here off of 12th Street, which is part of Truman Medical. Some of them programs cost unless you have to still wait on somebody to go through and say, well, yeah, there is, you know, something going on here.
Right.
But a lot of the mental health programs cost. That's why it's really, money
well, we
is really
do
needed.
Have, let me say this, a lot of them do, but there are programs, even like the Swope Truman,
yes.
as well as Rediscover,
we need
all
more.
Have resources
yes.
that they are able, that they are able to get those services.
Right.
Okay, Rediscover, most
right.
definitely. They have grants that are available through, I know they have the Department of Mental Health
right.
that offers grants. And so I want to say this to anyone, if you're coming out of prison or not, if you deal with any type of mental health disorder, bipolar, depression, PTSD, anything, and you need services, okay, don't not get services because you don't have Medicaid or Medicare
Thank
or you can't afford
yes.
it. There are programs. You can go through Rediscover. There are programs there. They will even put Truman and Swope. They even will provide transportation. This
right.
is part of a grant that the mental health, you know, people will pay for. They will even provide you with transportation.
Absolutely.
So even with, and then that's something
I
else
guess
too.
You're facing it too.
We have a lot of
we have a lot
of people who are incarcerated who were being treated for mental health issues on the inside. Well, when they come out, you know, people they only get. I think it's the, I know they give them. Oh, they've extended it now. I'm sorry, 90 days of medications. 90
okay.
days of medications, because at first it was 30 days, and they were seeing that was not enough for the people, enough time for the people to come out and get their services and get
right.
lined up and get their appointments. So they've extended it to 90 days, so they can get those meds for 90 days. To, you know, but when you come out, there are programs and things as such that they can get. You know, when someone is exonerated. Okay, now we just ran into that with a gentleman, Alvis Williams. He was one of the guys that I work with and help, and he did several years in prison, over 20. And when he got out, they wouldn't qualify him for the 90 days of meds because he was released. The governor, you know, let him out right before he went out of office. The governor did, but he wasn't, you know, like he didn't parole out. So they would not allow him to have 90 days worth of meds. They had 30. But just real quick, I want to go back to some resources we have here. We were just talking about that.
Right.
Horizon Health is who provides the health within the Missouri Department of Corrections. So they have the Horizon Health. They have a Missouri Reentry website. Okay. And they have a lot of stuff on there that you guys, you know, anyone that has just released, or if you have a family member that's getting ready to release, you guys refer them to the the Horizons website. It's www.horizonreentry.com. Okay. That's www.horizon, that's CORIZON reentry.com. And they have a wonderful website with a lot of resources that are there for the people to be able to access. Most definitely so. They have a nice website. Now, they also have some housing assistance through the Department of Corrections, okay,
Good.
Through Missouri Department of Corrections. A lot of people don't know that it exists, but it does. And they can actually, if a person is incarcerated and they're dealing with some type of disability, whether it's physical or mental, they can receive a voucher. They have housing vouchers. A lot of people don't know that.
That's
but they
amazing.
Do. And now that I'm talking about housing vouchers, let me say this, because a lot of people think because you are a felon that you cannot receive any type of public housing or Section 8 housing assistance. That is not true. People, let me just kind of hip you guys to something. Those organizations are funded by HUD, okay?
Mm-hmm.
HUD says you can get Section 8 or public housing, but your crime has to be so many years old, okay?
Okay.
So it's a difference between, if I went to prison for first degree murder, which I haven't, everyone, but if I did, then, and I say I did, let me say second degree, and I did 20 years, and I'm out, okay? And I go apply for housing. They deny me, and I've actually worked cases like this, where they deny me because they see my criminal history, okay? They see my criminal history. And they say, oh, violent charge, we can't help you. They automatically send me a letter of denial. What I do for people is I automatically appeal those.
Correct.
Because if you go and you pull the HUD statutes, it says from the time that you, you know, it's when you committed the crime.
Right.
Not when you got out of prison.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's when the judge said, you are guilty, slam that gavel, you are hereby sentenced to the Missouri Department of Corrections, Oklahoma Department of Corrections, Federal Bureau of Prisons, wherever they're going to send you. Okay? It's from the day that happens.
That you're sentenced.
Not from the day that you're released. So we had people that housing, and I hope some housing officials are listening, and they most definitely know who I am, that were denying felons the right to get Section 8 and public housing when that was not right.
Okay.
So if anyone out there has applied for public housing or Section 8 and you were denied, then you need to file an appeal, okay? You need to contact HUD, and the HUD office for that handles these agencies around here is located in Fort Worth, Texas. Okay.
Huh.
Google will find them and make you a complaint and come against them, because every housing authority is funded by HUD. Okay. It's not their money. It's HUD's money. So therefore they have to go by HUD guidelines.
Now, Latara, Now depending on that crime, is that make the time frame different from when you can apply from the time of the crime committed?
Say that again.
So from the time that the crime is committed, is that depending on what crime it was for them to be able to apply for the assistance?
If you have a charge of meth, anything, if it's producing meth, I don't even think it's possession of meth. I think it's manufacturing of meth, to my understanding, is the only charge that HUD will not allow you to have housing.
Okay.
It's manufacturing meth. Okay.
Okay.
It's manufacturing meth. And also, I want to say this to the people who may be dealing with, have a disability, whether it's physical or mental, and you're waiting on the Section 8 housing list, or you're waiting for public housing. What you need to do is make your worker, your case manager, aware that you have that disability. Because if you have a disability, or you're homeless, or you're dealing with domestic violence, okay, then what happens is you are able to get what's called a federal preference, a homeless preference, a disability preference, domestic violence preference, or whatever it is. Okay. You're able to get that because of the simple fact that you have that disability, and it'll literally advance you on the list. Right now, everyone, we're going to take a break and we're going to be back the second half of our show. I'm welcoming you all's phone calls.
As family and friends gather at this time of year, our thoughts often go to those who are absent. We hope you will remember those who are incarcerated and the empty seat at their family gathering, as well as the empty seat at the family gatherings of victims. The following letter was written by Prince Keon Dawkins L., held by the state of Missouri at the Charleston Correctional Center. He was thanking those members of Missouri Cure who had sent him birthday cards. With all these years in prison, I believe I've come to feel what a ghost must feel, forced to be a spectator in a world where I've been long forgotten, neither here nor there, as life goes on around me. Some have forgotten they were ever part of the world. They go around hating the world and the people in it. Others remember all too well. They long to be part of that world again, to be seen, to be heard, to be relevant. Every once in a while, for however brief it may be, someone like you sees us, really sees us. Not for what you all are told to see, a ghost, but for what lies beneath. For those who haven't and do not want to forget, who still cherish and hang on to our humanity, it means the world to us. So yes, behind these four walls, I've most definitely come to feel what a ghost must feel. But I am not a ghost, and this is how I know. Because you see me.
Well, hello, everyone. It's Latara Smith of the Casey Freedom Project, and we are back on the second half of our show. We are talking about reentry. People coming out of prison and reentering Kansas City or wherever they're reentering to, and the difficulties, as well as bringing out some information on the resources. The second half of this show most definitely is a call-in show. Our number is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. And if anyone wants to call in and share their experience or their story in reference to their, you know, leaving prison and coming out, readjusting and getting, you know, back acclimated and everything to society, give us a call. We'd like to hear your story. Most definitely would like to hear your story. DeAndre, you kind of hit on some really good points there earlier. You were talking about, you know, we were discussing the mental states and maybe how difficult it is of coming out. You want to kind of pick up on that again?
Well, yeah, definitely. Knowing that, you know, that these resources are available for you when you come out of incarceration, we want to definitely deal with the fact that, you know, that, you know, psychological aspects may take place. So for those that don't know, they may need to take advantage of those resources out there, because, you know, if you come out and you end up in a state of depression or having that high anxiety, that's going to, you know, hinder you from getting into the job and the workforce and just doing normal things that you need to do to get back on track with
right,
what you need to do.
Right. I believe, do we have a caller? Awesome. Awesome.
Great.
Okay. Hello, caller. Hi. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you this morning?
We're doing great. Thanks for asking.
Congratulations on this very enlightening show you have on the air this morning. I think it's definitely something that the public needs to be made aware of.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. Thank you. And so, caller, can you share your story with us about, you know, are you an ex-offender or someone that's been incarcerated before?
I'm a previously incarcerated person. I don't know that I would want to embrace the title of an offender. But,
well, I said that earlier. Yes, that's why I said someone has been incarcerated before, because some people don't like that. But share your story with us.
Well, I was released from the Department of Corrections first in 2005, and that release wasn't successful. I stayed out on the street for about maybe 5 months. And I went to this place they call the Kansas City Community Release Center.
Yes.
It's also known, they people refer to it as the Honor Center, but there's not really a whole lot that's very honorable about it. And, you know, it was considerable degree of harassment there and you know, people being put through a lot of unnecessary difficulties trying to get reestablished, to get back out on the street. And they were constantly using this excuse that people had to be, you know, to justify the aggravation that you had to put up with. They would tell you, well, we have to know before we release you back into society that you can handle the stress that comes with being out here in the free world. And, you know, a lot of the things that they put you through, it has nothing at all to do with the difficulties that you will encounter once you are gradually released or eventually released. And, you know, so I ended up going back to prison because of, you know, these problems and things that I kept constantly being presented with. I had been locked up in prison for a considerable number of years, 36 years, and that's small change now compared to what they the length of time that they're keeping people locked up now. I listened to DeAndre a while ago when he spoke about the mental health issues, and I want to point out that a good portion of these mental health issues come from the aggravation, the harassment, and all of the inhumane treatment that you receive in prison, and you have this psychological anger and frustration.
Oh, of course.
Right. And as men, we got to channel that.
Yeah, and if you don't, you know, when you get out of prison, I'm saying you think that all that is over, but when you run into situations out here where, you know, you sometimes get confronted with things that you don't want to have to deal with because you set up all these years and made yourself believe that all I got to do is just hold on long enough to get out of prison and I won't have to do this anymore. Well, when you run into them type of situations on the street, it's very difficult to try to manage those type of situations and restrain yourself, because at the same time that you was putting up with all this in prison, you know, you was telling yourself in the back of your mind, man, I hope somebody try to pull this on me when I get on the street.
Right.
And, when you get out, man, I'm saying that's how a lot of guys end up back. They have these flashbacks, and they start thinking, man, this is, I didn't come out here on these streets to go through all this. You know, I put up with all this while I was in prison. I'm out here. I shouldn't have to do this. And you know, with the availability of firearms and all this other type of stuff out here, you know, weapons and things of that nature, everybody just can't handle the pressure.
Right.
Now, on this criminal justice reform overhaul that they just did in Congress, and which I eventually, I imagine eventually trickle down here somewhere in Missouri because they're going to have to adopt these same federal standards.
Right, right, exactly.
But what we have to realize is that this is politics we're talking about. These people that's doing this overhaul in these criminal in this criminal justice system, they're not doing it because they're genuinely concerned about. I don't care how sincere a lot of them talk. Maybe you know if you're dealing with somebody like Representative Brandon Ellington and Bruce Franks, they're a different kind of horse because they, you know, this is something that I think they are genuinely committed to. You know, but the rest of these people, I mean, they're doing this because of politics. Number one, they need to release a lot of these people from prison.
Exactly.
Because they're faced with the possibility of having to build two more prisons, which is going to cost $500 million, and they don't want to do it. And it's crisis. It's only when crises like these they find themselves confronted with to make them realize, okay, now we got to change something.
Right.
If we want real changes, we got to vote some of them people out of office. I don't care what they're talking about now. You got to get them out of there because they're not genuinely committed. And they're just, this is cosmetic.
Hmm.
You know, they're doing what they need to do to make it look like they're trying to solve the problem. And man, it took years to even get these people to this point. They had to be confronted with this crisis. I mean, they knew this was coming out all along. And a lot of the, you know, prison reform groups and prison advocates and all this type of stuff, we've been telling these people for years, you have to do something about this overcrowded situation.
Right, right.
And they just ignored it. So,
right.
Like I said, they're only doing this now because they have to do it.
Right. Well, caller, let me ask you something. When you came out many, many years ago, you said back in 2005?
Well, that was in 2005. I went back. I stayed back until 2008 after I went back and I got released again.
Okay.
And
so let me ask you something. When you got out in 2005 and 2008, were there any resources available? I know you said you went to the Kansas City, whatever the home is you said you went to, but were there other resources available for you at that time? And if it was, did you take advantage of any of those resources, reentry resources?
Well, when I got out in 2008, there was a lot of emphasis on trying to assist homeless people. Most of the resources that I was able to take advantage of, they were designed for homeless people. And a lot of people, when they get out of prison, this is the situation that they find
right.
themselves in.
Of course.
You know, being homeless.
Of course.
You know, and I wasn't, you know, completely homeless. I'm saying I had a temporary place to stay. I was living with my family and things like that. But the overwhelming majority of the help that I received when I got out, it came from relatives, personal friends, and things of that nature. There weren't really a lot of resources out here, and a lot of these resources had time limits. I mean, you know, like, you know, if you were maybe like outside of the 90-day time frame of being released, then, you know, some of those resources, they took it for granted that you've been out here long enough where you lasted 90 days,
right.
You should be on your feet or something. So this is for people that's just coming out of prison. Yeah. I ran into that problem quite a bit. I ran into that same predicament you talked about where they tried to use the length of time that you had been out of prison as
right.
opposed to the length of time that the crime had committed. It had been something like 25 years before I had, since I had my last conviction. And the time, you know, the regulations in the housing authority only required that you have a conviction that's 5 years old. And
right.
I argued with him about that. I said, I don't have to be out of prison 5 years or any length of time. I said, my conviction has to be 5 years old, which means the day that I got sentenced.
Exactly.
Is the time that the counting of that time is supposed to start. Well, a lot of times when you deal with these type of bureaucrats, I'm saying they still find a way to do whatever they want to do. Okay, I waited all this time trying to get my application in front of these people. And then they denied. They said, "Well, okay, we'll do. You can sign up again, and which meant that I had to go through this process all over again."
Oh yeah, yeah. I trust me, I get it. I know. Yeah.
And I only got into a public housing facility because I came to the place where I happen to be living at right now, and the lady that was the property manager, she took a personal interest in me. I sat down and I talked to her. I told her, I said, look, I ain't here to play no games. I said, I don't want to waste your time. I don't want you to waste mine. I said, I got some criminal convictions. I said, I've done some bad things in my life. I said, but I'm a different person now. I said, but if this is going to be some type of obstacle or impediment, you know, you can let me know right now. I said, and, you know, I'll just go ahead and go somewhere else and go look for something. And she touched her in the heart. And she said, look, I understand everybody makes mistakes. You know, they fall down in life, she said. And, you know, we sit down and we talk. And, you know, she actually, some kind of way or another, she maneuvered some paperwork. And she got me pushed all the way through there before they had a chance to rule on my previous application. You know,
right.
And, but that was, you know, I mean, everybody doesn't run into those type of people.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You know, exactly. I spent 36 years out of my life in prison. People ask me how long I had been locked up, I tell them they used to blow them away. Because it wasn't that many people that was been locked up for that length of time back then. Now it's common practice. Like I said, you got people that's been locked up even longer than I spent in prison. I mean, we just got another guy that we've been trying to help get out of prison for years. He just spent 47 years in prison.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Which is that's a half a century.
Yes.
Right. You know, and, you know, so, you know, when I sit down somewhere and I'm with this guy here and he starts talking about how long he's been locked up and the things, I shut up because I'm like, man, if you did that long in there, that wasn't hardly nothing compared to what I did.
Right. And can you imagine his adjustment back out here? And, you know, I'm sure that it's pretty tough. But you know what, caller, I want to thank you for calling in. We're going to get to pulling out some more of these resources. Thank you so much. And, you know, you hang in there.
Yeah, you keep your head up, brother.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Everyone, if there's anyone else that would like to call in, we most definitely are taking calls. The number here to the studio is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. You know, and what the caller just said, I mean, most definitely, you know, is so true. So
yeah,
there's someone
definitely
that ran into that same situation of being denied housing assistance when, you know, really that's not what, you know, the HUD rules state. Okay.
They were trying to, you know, tell him that the time frame started from when he got out instead
right.
of when a crime was
and
committed.
And I've seen that happen quite a bit. You know, I've seen it happen. I've actually challenged housing authorities, you know, and brought them up on that. Was like kind of pull their coattail, like, you're denying all my brothers and sisters a chance to get housing. And you're going against HUD rules and regulations, you know. And it took me to go to HUD. And then it took them to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We won't, if they apply, we're going to, this was the Plano Housing Authority in Texas. They said, if they apply, Latara, what we're going to do is we're going to deny them. But if they come back and file an appeal and they can show us proof that they've been rehabilitated, then we'll process their applications. And, you know, sometimes these housing authorities, they list don't open too often. And when it does, it's like a big announcement through the newspaper on the news, and it's like long lines of people. So this particular agency was one of those where people would be lined up for like a mile down the street to apply.
Right.
So I made sure and had all of the women in my mentoring group. We were there. We spent the night. We camped out
like
the night
Black
before.
Friday.
Yeah, we camped out. I mean, if you could camp out for some Jordans or some
right,
stuff, you
right.
know, we're going to camp out with housing.
Some housing.
Because I needed to give my sister some houses.
That's
because
right.
I didn't want them reoffending.
That's
trying
right.
to hustle and hit licks just to make it, you know?
Right.
So I said, okay. And I got out there with them. We had our lawn chairs, our blankets. We were out. We actually were out there the day before at like 3:00. We were there all night long. They were the first ones at the door to sign in. And we already had their appeal letters ready. and we had already gotten from their case managers in prison proof that they had taken the different classes, whether it was anger management, you know, coping classes, drug treatment classes, whatever classes they took in prison, we had already contacted the officials in TDCJ and had gotten all their letters ready. So when it was time, when they put that application, they didn't even have a chance to deny them, because here's the appeal letter, here's the proof of rehabilitation, and all of those women in my mentoring classes got their Section 8 vouchers and were moving in houses within like months. So, you know, that's when I learned.
They were in your mentoring class.
Yes.
So these were things that you were preparing them for in those mentoring classes as well.
So in TDCJ, and then in Oklahoma, I came down there and we did the same thing all over again. And when I work with the wraparound reentry program for Oklahoma Department of Corrections, and we had to do the same thing, because there again, my incarcerated sisters were being denied housing and things as such. So anyone that is listening here in Kansas City, I know that Kansas City, Missouri has a housing, Lee Summit, Independence, they have some around the city here. If you are denied, if you are felon, if you are denied, I strongly encourage you to challenge that. If you need assistance, contact me at the Casey Freedom Project. I'll be more than happy to help you. 816-456-9776, and I will personally do your paperwork and your appeal and help you out. Okay, so moving forward to some more resources that we have, there's a really nice organization. It's called Journey to New Life. Okay, this the journey, they have a journey house for women. They offer permanent housing, emergency assistance. They also have veterans housing as well, okay? They even help you with disability assistance, because like we talked about, a lot of people coming out of prison, you know, deal with mental health disorders. Whether it's like the last caller just said, you know, you come out, I mean, you go through a lot of stuff in prison. I'm not going to sit here and say prison was hunky-dory for me, because it wasn't. You go through quite a bit.
But I like how he said, you know, when you're sitting there in prison, you be like, well, when I'm out on the streets, you know, I wish this would happen. I would react differently. And then when you get out here, then you react differently as you thought you would when you was incarcerated. Right. That might lead you right back where you got. You
because know, a lot of things that the people experience in prison, I'm not just talking about from the staff to the inmate, but I'm talking about what goes on in the environment of prison, period. Like, you see people get killed. I mean, it's a rough place. I mean, it is what it is. And sometimes a lot of people come out and they deal with PTSD, you know, post-traumatic stress. I mean, they deal with this stuff. And, you know, it makes it very hard. But even in that situation, if they come out and they seek that mental health treatment that they need, then they're going to qualify for a lot of different service, you know, a lot of different issues. Like, this organization helps people to apply for their disability and get their disability. You know, if someone is incarcerated and they dealt with mental health issues then and they come out now, then yes, they need to apply for their disability.
Absolutely. And a lot of times some people may be dealing with mental health issues before you get incarcerated.
That could very much could have led to their incarceration. Yeah, definitely.
And it's just the unknowing factor. And then when you get incarcerated, it's just building on that and building on that.
Right.
And then you come out and it's just a never-ending cycle. So it's definitely important that we self-evaluate and take advantage of these resources.
Right. And so when you have an organization like Journey to New Life, okay, and let me get their website really quick. It's www.journey2newlife.org. Okay, this is a wonderful organization. I mean, they do a lot for people, okay? And they're located at 3120 Troost Avenue, and their telephone number is 816-960-4808, okay? Now, when you have someone that's dealing with disabilities, that's coming out of prison or whatever, and that's what makes this organization real important. There are other organizations that will help individuals like with disability assistance, because, you know, many times we have people in prison as well as just in society, period, that are illiterate. So they have problems with reading and comprehension, and they don't know how to fill these papers out. So to have advocates like myself or individuals from these various groups to help you with that process is very valuable. And it's a blessing, most definitely. So it most definitely is a blessing. And so, you know, it is so important. And this is something else I want to say to individuals who, when it comes to transitional housing, Okay, there's lots of different types of transitional housing programs that are available. Some of these transitional housings for people coming out of prison, they charge the individuals. And I have to say this because everybody knows me, knows I'm going to keep it 100 and I'm going to keep it real.
Right.
Okay. How do some of these transitional living homes, the ones that do charge people $90, $100 a week, how can we ever get the person ready to move forward and be self-sufficient if they're coming out of prison into these transitional homes that are charging these people $190 a week?
When they need to be saving.
When they need to save so that they can move forward.
Right.
That's one thing I don't agree about with some of the transitional housing. I can't say if it's any in our local area that does that, but I know for a fact in Oklahoma and Texas they did it. And actually doing so hindered the process of those men and women coming out of prison and becoming self-sufficient and becoming productive citizens, moving out. We should want to help the ex-offenders or the people coming out of prison. Let me say that. I don't want to make my last caller mad, but I want to say this. We should want to help them, push them towards success, push them towards reunification with their family. You know, this is why it's so important in like the wraparound program we had established in Oklahoma DOC, where we actually went into the prison and worked with these individuals 6 months prior to their release, because we established a rapport with them. We came up with plans, and these women got out and they were successful. They were successful. Awesome. So, you know, in closing, because I know it's time for us to wrap it up, anyone that has a family member, I just want to recap some of these resources. You have Second Chance. Their telephone number is 816-960-6800. You have the Missouri Reentry Program and Assistance. Their website is www.exoffenders.net. You have Corizon Health. Okay, and their website is www.corizonreentry.com. And we have Journey to New Life, www.journeytonewlife.org. I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. And thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And everyone, have a blessed day.
It's the 420 Drug War News. Our guest on last week's Cultural Baggage Show was J.S. Raffaele, who, along with Neil Woods, wrote the best-selling Drug Wars, the terrifying inside story of Britain's drug trade.
Quoting from your book again here, from the preface, with so much money in the drugs game, how can corruption not happen? It had got to the point that with drug investigations, police corruption had just become an accepted part of the game. And that's the hell of it, isn't it? That we have corruption at every juncture of this drug war. That's what makes it run, correct?
Well, that is one of the major threads of investigation in the book, is how, and I don't think people really, it's not common knowledge, to the extent to which corruption, the corruption of law enforcement and the corruption of the systems that are meant to protect us, is financially completely based on the drugs trade. Of course, there were a few corrupt cops. There was police. There were bent coppers in England. There were corrupt cops in America prior to the drug war. But the scale is so exponentially different as soon as you bring a black market in drugs to the picture that it changes the very nature of the game. It changes the actual nature of the corruption, because it just swells to an extent we've never before seen.
Well, and I think that is the case, and it continues to swell. It continues to grow. I mean, you're, I think, well aware of the situation here in the U.S., where we have this influx of fentanyl and carfentanil, which, I end this program with the phrase, because of prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please be careful. And that's become more pertinent than ever before. Am I right?
Well, it's what I think it was Richard Cowan who defined the iron law of prohibition.
Yep.
That in any time you prohibit a substance, it will get stronger. And that was true in the prohibition of alcohol in the 20s and 30s in America. And it's true of the cannabis market right now in the UK, which we trace in the book very clearly, how the strains of cannabis got much stronger under prohibition. And it's true on the streets of, you know, the American Rust Belt now, with the flood of fentanyl and opiates. And this is a pattern that repeats itself over and over and over again. And it's a very simple policy. A very simple policy switch could save a lot of lives. And it's really tragic how people don't make that switch.
Again, our guest has been J.S. Raffaele, co-author of Drug Wars. I am Dean at DrugTruth.net.
Sitting here in my problem, what am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not supposed to know.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.